This is All About Living with Carol Colby. All About Living is brought to you by Gunderson Funeral Home Cremation Care, Turville Bay MRI and Radiation Oncology Center in Madison, Home Health United, The Medicine Shop Monona, Independent Living. All About Living with Carol Colby.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome again to All About Living. Always a pleasure to have you with us. It's November, and November means a lot of things, but in the health world, it is National Family Caregivers Month and also National Alzheimer's Awareness Month. And in addition to the other things, we're going to tie those two together today and discuss both of them because they certainly are interrelated. 80% of family caregivers are unpaid, and they represent the greatest significant population of caregivers in the country. And actually, they've analyzed the dollar value of this service that unpaid family caregivers give, and it's about a $257 or billion industry. So that's quite significant, particularly in these days when we're talking about healthcare and the costs and the access to it. And we are very aware of Alzheimer's as one of the, and maybe the main leading illness condition that is particularly affecting the aging population. It is one that so far there is no cure. There are attempts to manage it, and there are many tools that can be used to enhance the quality of life, but treatments and cures are still around the corner. And so it is rising at a level that it currently about one in two people, 85 or older, will be affected by Alzheimer's. And one of the statements about caregivers are either you are a caregiver, you will be a caregiver, or you will take care of someone who is or know somebody who is. So it's going to be a part of all of our lives. I was participating in a caregivers forum this week, and much of the emphasis was on dealing with the areas of dementia because that seems to be the most difficult area in caregiving. So here to discuss these issues are two people who have great expertise, and together they bring it to us in this radio program today on All About Living. Mary Reines is here. Mary is Program Director of the Alzheimer's and Dementia Alliance of Wisconsin. She has been in that position for about 13 years and coordinates the many programs and services of the Alliance. Mary, the Alliance serves about nine counties in South Central Wisconsin.
Yes, nine counties, about 16,000 or more people who are dealing with Alzheimer's disease or some type of dementia, and then of course you add on their family caregivers, and it's quite a large number of people.
And you have programs and services that are really focused on all of the individual aspects, because you almost have to tailor a particular program or a support service for the individual and what they are experiencing.
Exactly. We do have education programs, various education programs, starting from when somebody is just thinking about, gee, what's the difference between normal aging and some type of memory change, on up to some in-depth programming that we do. But I think one of the things that is that we do that's a little bit more unique is we really do work with caregivers on an individual basis to try to help them apply the information to their unique situations, because there's an old adage out there, you know, if you've seen one person or met one person with Alzheimer's disease, you've met one person with Alzheimer's disease. And that's really true when it comes to applying the information and the major, major challenges there are with, okay, you know, I can read about this, but how does it resonate with what I'm doing day to day with this person? And that's really what we try to do in all aspects of our programming.
Well, I can certainly relate to this, and I did turn to you over a decade ago because I needed personal services that you offered in my own life, and it really ties in with our other guest that is joining us today. Life goes around full circle. I am absolutely so pleased, delighted, to introduce Dr. Cindy Carlson, and she is an assistant professor in the Division of Geriatrics at the University of Wisconsin School of Medicine and Public Health, Wow. And the Madison VA Geriatrics Research Educational and Clinical Center. Do you remember, without looking down on a piece of paper, what the whole title is of the health organizations that you're affiliated with, Dr. Carlson?
I hope I do.
Yeah, right. Ooh, it takes three lines on a piece of paper. Dr. Carlson sees patients at the VA Memory Assessment Clinic and serves as the medical director of the clinic. And her special clinical and research interests focus on understanding the effects of vascular risk factors and their treatments on risk for Alzheimer's disease. She is currently conducting clinical research studies investigating the effects of cholesterol-lowering medications, otherwise known as statins, on the prevention of Alzheimer's disease. And her research, she is striving to see if treating blood vessel risk factors could reduce the risk of developing Alzheimer's disease in certain groups of people. And I want to talk more about that with you too, Dr. Carlson. But just getting back to the personal level, I sought out the services over a decade ago of the Alzheimer's and Dementia Alliance. At that point time, it was the South Central chapter of the Alzheimer's Association. And because my husband was suffering from dementia, and Dr. Cindy Carlson was his physician. And that was one of the truly positive experiences, both the relationship with you, Mary, and then Dr. Carlson, to have you as David's physician, made it all possible to get through. And so I thank you both for that. And Dr. Carlson, you are the epitome of what everybody would dream and hope for in a physician, no matter what the condition.
Well, thank you, Carol. It's really an honor to be here, and it was an honor to be a part of your husband's care. So,
he died in August of 2001, so we're talking over 9 years ago, and this is the first time you and I have had a chance to talk professionally where you've been a guest on my radio program, so I truly appreciate your being here. This segment of our program is brought to you by Turville Bay MRI and Radiation Oncology Center in Madison, where expertise with compassion is powerful medicine. One of the questions that I get, because we do talk about Alzheimer's, it is such a critical health issue, and we talk about it quite a bit on this program, is there are Alzheimer's and dementia. Alzheimer's is only one form, and people are really looking for more information on what dementia really means across the board and the different forms of dementia. And Dr. Carlson, if I may turn to you, if you could give an umbrella definition of dementia and then talk about the main dementias that we are really concerned with today and that are growing in numbers.
Yes, it is a common question that people come. Sometimes even primary care physicians aren't sure exactly how dementia versus other subtypes of dementia, what the differences are. And even backing up to that, what's different between normal aging and having a dementia? So I think, first of all, a lot of us will have more difficulty learning things as we get older. We may find that it's more difficult to retrieve information that we have. We might walk into a room and forget what we went into the room for or misplace our keys. But if it's not affecting our day-to-day life, then it's probably just a normal part of aging. If we're still able to maintain our checkbook and keep up with our social ties, keep doing our volunteer activities, whatever we're doing later on in life, that's part of normal aging. Dementia is when you start having memory problems that aren't just affecting where you put your keys, but something that's more severe, where it's affecting your day-to-day life and how you're able to care for yourself. So people might start getting lost, misplacing items on a regular basis that affects their function. They can't balance a checkbook. They're forgetting their doctor's appointments. They're forgetting conversations to the point that they're not able to participate in their usual day-to-day activities. So that's really the definition of dementia, is that they have memory loss and other thinking abilities, so things like language, ability to plan things and sequence things. So those type of thinking abilities are affected, and it's severe enough it affects your day-to-day function. So that's a really key point, is it has to be severe enough to affect your day-to-day function for it to be termed a dementia.
Does it always escalate?
If it's truly a dementia, then it will escalate over time. So it will be a progressive in most cases, actually, I should quantify that. So this gets to where we talk about the different types of dementia. So a lot of people get confused. Do I have Alzheimer's or do I have dementia? Well, really, dementia is the bigger umbrella term, as you mentioned. Mm-hmm. The most common type of dementia is Alzheimer's disease.
And specifically, then, what is Alzheimer's disease? How does it manifest itself?
So Alzheimer's, again, is the most common type of dementia. It's one where usually memory problems are the first symptoms that people will note. So again, they might forget how to balance their checkbook. They might forget people's names, and not just new people's names or TV personalities' names, but names of close friends they've known for years, names of family members. So it's more of a affects memory and daily function like dementia does, but it's in a gradually progressive manner.
Because many people, particularly as you get older, and I'm one of the worst offenders, give me 20 minutes and I'll remember your name kind of thing. So
right.
I think people get a little bit concerned, oh my gosh, maybe I'm developing this. Mm-hmm. But it's beyond that, right?
It's beyond that. And it has to be, it's usually a progressive illness. So usually the symptoms come on subtly. You know, if you've had a poor night's sleep or had gone through a medical illness, maybe it'll become a little more pronounced. But it will progress if it is truly an Alzheimer's disease. Mm-hmm.
And what are the other symptoms of Alzheimer's?
Alzheimer's can also be associated with some language problems, so people can have trouble finding the right word. Usually it's not as pronounced as in certain other types of dementia, but they can have trouble with word-finding problems. They also can have some behavioral changes. So people can have episodes where they're more agitated than they normally would be. They get more easily frustrated than they would otherwise. There are also maybe some problems with planning something out. So maybe a skill that's very routine to someone, they may not remember how to do that. So they may put, you know, mayonnaise into the spaghetti instead of spaghetti sauce, or do some errors along those lines.
I know with some Alzheimer's patients that they develop behaviors that are angry, and they tend to become more volatile, while others can become passive. So are there any particular behaviors that are distinct with Alzheimer's, or is this just part of what the original personality perhaps was? And it surfaces with Alzheimer's disease?
It really varies from person to person. You know, as Mary mentioned earlier, you've seen one case of Alzheimer's, you've seen one case. Sometimes you'll see people who are very calm, even-keeled people, and they remain calm and even-keeled throughout their disease course. Sometimes you'll get people who are calm and even-keeled and now are very irritable, angry, say things they wouldn't say otherwise. Other times you'll get someone who had a coarse personality to begin with, and their personality coarsens over time. So it's kind of exacerbation of their mm-hmm. kind of crude personality.
I was just going to add another thing to keep in mind with behaviors is that a lot of what's happening behavior-wise with someone who has an Alzheimer's disease may be related to how they're being interacted with, how they're understanding a situation, and what that caregiver, people around them are doing. So there is a lot that can be done from the caregiver skill-building aspect and understanding different ways you have to relate to the person to help them be as successful as possible. So sometimes behaviors are not an inherent part
right.
of the disease. They're driven by the environment around them.
When,
and so there are things that can be done with some of them.
When you yes. think of the caregivers typically being family members, mm-hmm. unpaid caregivers, and they haven't really been trained.
Mm-hmm.
So I can envision, and I can even relate back to my own experience, you try to create a normal situation mm-hmm. that is normal to you.
Mm-hmm.
And it may not be. It may be too much or just adverse mm-hmm. to what the person really
exactly.
at that particular stage of their disease really mm-hmm. would benefit from.
Exactly. You have to right. create an environment that's the new normal for the person who's mm-hmm. trying to navigate their world with real brain changes that are affecting that.
Mm-hmm. And is too much commotion, is one of the basic things is to kind of back down and keep mm-hmm. life simpler and not so complicated and
mm-hmm.
confused?
That can certainly be a very effective strategy for many people, yes.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
How would you go about diagnosing Alzheimer's?
Alzheimer's disease currently is diagnosed really by clinical means. So it usually takes an interview with the patient and the family or caregiver, friends, people who know the person well. We interview them carefully to see what kind of changes they've had over time in their memory, in their functional status, and they usually do some type of memory testing. So ask some questions that tap into their memory skills or language skills, how well they can copy pictures and understands how things relate to each other in space. So there's some different types of sometimes simple tests that can be done in the clinic to check different thinking skills, and sometimes they're longer, what we call cognitive batteries, that are more difficult and tap into people who maybe have real subtle changes.
Can we diagnose 100% that somebody has Alzheimer's disease?
Not really, unless the definite Alzheimer's disease is only able to be diagnosed on autopsy. But even then, you can get people with brain changes that look like Alzheimer's, but they may not have had symptoms in life. So nothing's perfect, but what we piece together now is the clinical history and try to make sure there's nothing else that we think is affecting their memory, like a medication or another medical problem that could be treated differently.
So it's a process of elimination, too.
It is.
Are there, what about PET scans, MRIs, blood tests?
So we do blood tests, usually to rule out other things like any electrolyte abnormalities or any vitamin deficiencies, thyroid abnormalities, and then also use MRI scans to make sure there's no strokes or other brain changes that could account for their memory problems. But the brain changes that we see on MRI, you can see kind of a global or generalized shrinkage of the brain called atrophy. But sometimes you can see also a normal brain. So it may not tell you for sure that someone has Alzheimer's. PET scans can be helpful for trying to tease apart different types of dementias. They look at how well the brain uses blood sugar or sugar in the brain. And there's certain patterns you can see on PET scans with Alzheimer's disease, but even that's not 100% as well.
So how close do you come to a full analysis, an analysis that you feel is truly accurate?
Frequently, if we have a patient who does go to autopsy, sometimes there's other changes in the brain that are surprising to us. They may have a few different types of brain changes, Alzheimer's, maybe some strokes that weren't noted, some other changes consistent with other types of dementias. In general, I think the rate is about 80% accuracy for centers that have well-established clinicians who are used to seeing dementia. It gets a lot lower than that when we're out in the community with physicians who may not see that many dementia cases and are not as used to diagnosing Alzheimer's.
I suspect working with it on a daily basis and seeing patients that you get more acclimated. It's like, I know it when I see it kind of a concept. Mm-hmm. We're going to stop for a break right now. When we come back, we're going to move on to the other dementias, some of them being vascular dementia, Lewy body disease, mm-hmm. and then Pick's disease, or better known as what, frontotemporal or frontal lobe?
Frontotemporal dementia.
Our guests today are Dr. Cindy Carlson, who is an assistant professor in the Division of Geriatrics at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health, and Mary Reines, who is program director of the Alzheimer's and Dementia Alliance of Wisconsin. And we'll be right back with more of All About Living after these messages. You're listening to All About Living here on Madison 1670 WTDY.
This is All About Living with Carol Colby, Madison 1670 WTDY.
Welcome back to our program. We're talking about Alzheimer's and caregiving today, both because November is National Family Caregivers Month and National Alzheimer's Awareness Month. And what we're finding more and more that when it involves caregiving, family members caregiving, many, many times, most times, I think now, the true frustration and the bewilderment comes with dealing with areas of dementia. We're defining the dementias today. Dr. Cindy Carlson is here, and amongst other things, she sees patients at the VA Memory Assessment Clinic and is the medical director of that clinic. She's an assistant professor in the Division of Geriatrics at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health. She's doing her own research looking at statins in the prevention of Alzheimer's disease, and through her research, she hopes to see if treating blood vessel risk factors could reduce the risk of developing Alzheimer's disease in certain groups of people. Mary Reines is also here. She's program director of the Alzheimer's and Dementia Alliance of Wisconsin, who offers programs and services in 9 counties in South Central Wisconsin. And we talked about what dementia is, what Alzheimer's disease is, the main form of dementia, the most common. But there are other dementias as well, Dr. Carlson. And if we could move through those, because people are wondering what else is there, and there are different symptoms that are manifested with each dementia. which we talked about Alzheimer's, and then vascular dementia is also a very common one, correct?
Yes, vascular dementia by itself is actually not as common, but it's common to see vascular dementia mixed with Alzheimer's disease. So vascular dementia is when a person, again, has functional impairment, they meet criteria for dementia, but they have a discrete stroke, so they have an episode in time where their memory changed abruptly. And then over time, what you'll see is that if they don't have another stroke and they just have vascular dementia, their memory symptoms over time might gradually improve or stabilize. Whereas if you have Alzheimer's on top of that, or if you have repeated mini strokes, then your memory over time will gradually worsen.
So what is happening in the brain with these mini strokes that can then cause a form of dementia?
So what happens over time is that when we typically think about strokes, we think about the type that cause weakness on one side of the body or trouble talking. Well, if we have a blood vessel that's blocked in an area of the brain where the thinking abilities are, then that can affect the memory. It may not affect our what we call motor function or movement abilities. So again, with vascular dementia, it'll be a sudden onset of memory symptoms. Again, it'll affect their day-to-day function, but again, hopefully it'll stabilize. But again, it's rare to see just vascular dementia, but more common to see vascular dementia mixed with Alzheimer's disease.
If it's just vascular dementia, are there treatments available to help the improvement?
The main treatment is to help prevent another stroke. So again, aggressive treatment of blood vessel risk factors, you know, high blood pressure, cholesterol, sometimes an aspirin will be recommended. Those are really important parts of preventing another stroke. Some of the medicines that are approved for Alzheimer's, such as the what we call cholinesterase inhibitors, or medicines like donepezil, also known as Aricept, rivastigmine, which is known as galantamine, and then Razadyne, which is also known as galantamine, and then rivastigmine, which is known as Exelon. Those three medicines all are used for Alzheimer's disease, but also have some effect in people with vascular dementia.
Mary, when the Alzheimer's and Dementia Alliance, you deal with people with vascular dementia also and
yes.
these other components.
Mm-hmm.
And what have you noted when you look at somebody who is actually trying to incorporate a lifestyle that's beneficial?
Mm-hmm. I think this is something I wanted to bring up and see what Dr. Carlson has to say about as well. But one of the things that typically I've seen over the years with people who have vascular dementia is, and it doesn't happen all the time, but oftentimes there's a lack of get up and go, or more. Sometimes you can really see more of an apathy that can look like depression or that kind of a thing. That's I've seen. Also some other symptoms, and I'm not saying this is with everybody, but that we've seen is some of the loss of social graces early on, where they might be saying things, person might say something, make a comment that's not uncharacteristically inappropriate at a particular setting. Seems like with people who have come to us with a vascular dementia, we certainly see that with other types of dementia as well. But those two things in particular, I've seen that caregivers mm-hmm. are dealing with. I don't know if you've seen that as well, or
I have seen. So it is common for people who've had a stroke to have depression as well, mm-hmm. which is another point that's important to make, is that about a third of people who have dementia may have some related depression either beforehand or after the diagnosis. Mm-hmm. So it's important to get that depression treated, because that can affect concentration and memory as well. Mm-hmm. And once that's treated, that'll hopefully improve their symptoms to a certain extent. So it is common that people with a stroke will have some depression symptoms. I haven't seen it depends really where the stroke is. If it's in the front part of the brain or frontal areas, then it can cause some what we call disinhibition or the loss of social graces. Mm-hmm. So that can occur as well.
This has to be difficult for caregivers mm-hmm. when people aren't, I always think of the concept of screening what they say or their thoughts mm-hmm. before they say them mm-hmm. and things are blurted out and it hurts people's feelings, mm-hmm. or they try to cover up for the individual. It mm-hmm. just creates a lot of internal psychological stress in people who are caregivers.
Exactly.
Or the family members.
Mm-hmm. I think certainly not taking it personally is something that we talk a lot about with family members, because it is something that the person, you know, just cannot control. If they could, they wouldn't say some of these things.
Right.
Other things that we've suggested for caregivers that can be helpful is if you're out somewhere and say you're at a restaurant and a person makes a comment that's inappropriate for somebody else in the restaurant or a waitress, you might carry a card that gives a little bit of an explanation that that you could give to a person to let them know that this is not something they would normally do and that they have a disease process that's causing this, and give it to them on the side, yeah. Which can sometimes help you feel better.
That's why talking mm-hmm. with you at the Alzheimer's Dementia Alliance would be so critically helpful, because whatever the situation is, you can bounce the situation off of you and come up with strategies mm-hmm. in how to deal with it mm-hmm. and kind of neutralize it, mm-hmm. because you're not going to necessarily change the individual.
Exactly.
You just have to change the circumstances so it's mm-hmm. it's a more positive experience.
And it's coming to terms yourself with understanding exactly how those effects are, you know, that it's the effects of the disease that are causing these things, not something they're wanting to do to you. Or I think especially with family members that maybe have had a difficult time, a difficult or challenging relationship with their loved one all along. I'm thinking of some adult children who maybe they haven't always had the best relationship with a parent, mm-hmm. and they hear some things coming out of a parent's mouth with dementia that maybe might sound, you know, mean once in a while.
Well, this
and
just
they're
going
to go back to their mm-hmm. past relationship when really it's the disease now oftentimes that's
yes.
causing it, not trying to perpetuate a bad relationship. The person is not doing these things on purpose, basically.
Dr. Carlson, you mentioned that vascular dementia, sometimes if you can prevent additional strokes or whatever, mm-hmm. that there is improvement. With Alzheimer's disease, is there any treatment or any lifestyle plan that people can follow that will improve, that will make Alzheimer's better, or is it at a level and you're just trying to stop it from getting any worse?
Unfortunately, now there's no cure for Alzheimer's disease, and the medicines that we have available, so there's the three that I mentioned before that are the commonly used ones, and also one called Namenda or memantine. All the medicines basically slow down that inevitable decline. So they're not going to necessarily make someone better. It'll just slow down that progression. So it's frustrating for us as clinicians in that we're just trying to delay the inevitable. But I think there's no established lifestyle measures, but in general we think that exercise, that taking care of blood vessel risk factors, that staying socially engaged is probably good for people for the most part. But we don't have strong scientific evidence yet to prove that. But from the studies that are out there, it seems like those things help people.
Well, there's certainly quality of life issues. Mm-hmm. So if
yes,
you know,
exactly.
if you can't cure, at least enhance the quality of life. But there, that's a big part of mm-hmm. making the decisions that are in the patient's interest to enhance the patient's quality of life mm-hmm. and not have the patient try to follow what you think mm-hmm. is a good or a fun thing to mm-hmm. do. So,
and I think when as a caregiver, that's what we're trying to help with some of our programming, both people who are in the early stages, you know, how can you enhance the quality of your life as you live day to day with these changes? What kinds of strategies can you put in place to be as successful as possible? How can you work on your relationship and how and expectations, the changes you have there, and being realistic about those.
And the relationships with all members of the family.
Exactly.
And kind of coming together. We need to stop for another break. When we come back, we're going to talk about Lewy body disease and frontotemporal dementia, two other forms of dementia, mm-hmm. less common than Alzheimer's, but seemingly to be growing in numbers, mm-hmm. or maybe that more are just being diagnosed. Mm-hmm. You're listening to All About Living here on Madison 1670 WTDY. This segment of our program is brought to you by Home Health United. You got a friend right here online at homehealthunited.org. And the Medicine Shop Monona, caring beyond prescriptions. I'm Carol Colby, and we'll be right back with our guests after these messages.
This is All About Living with Carol Colby, Madison 1670, WTDY.
We're back with our program. This segment is brought to you by Independent Living, your connection to an independent life. and Gunderson Funeral and Cremation Care, the Life Celebration Center. We're talking about dementias today and caregiving. Our guests are Dr. Cindy Carlson, an assistant professor in the Division of Geriatrics at the University of Wisconsin School of Medicine and Public Health and medical director of the VA Memory Assessment Clinic. And Mary Reines is also here. She's program director of the Alzheimer's and Dementia Alliance of Wisconsin. We're trying to clear up in the program today the different forms of dementia and how they manifest themselves and what can be done, if anything, to help treat them or at least enhance the quality of life. We've talked about dementias, Alzheimer's disease, vascular dementias. One that I hear more and more about is Lewy body disease. And can you describe what Lewy body disease is, Dr. Carlson?
Yes, Lewy body disease is a type of dementia where people may have symptoms that look a little bit like Parkinson's disease. So frequently they'll come to their doctor, maybe they have a very small tremor in their hand and also are having some memory symptoms. They might focus more on the tremor, and so their doctor might think they have Parkinson's disease and try them on Parkinson's medicines, and it may not even help them. And instead, their memory symptoms get worse over time. And so that's typically what we call a Lewy body disease, where they have memory symptoms, they have tremors, they might have more frequent falls. Also, their course is a little more variable. So from day to day, they may have a good day where they're very on target and able to stay awake and be alert and interactive. And then another day, or maybe another part of the day, where they're really not able to follow what you're saying, more confused, more lethargic. So their course really varies from day to day. Whereas some people with Alzheimer's might have some good and bad days, but not to the extremes that we see with Lewy body disease.
How quickly does it advance?
It tends to advance a little more quickly than Alzheimer's disease, and also tends to occur a little bit earlier in the life course compared to Alzheimer's. So Alzheimer's we usually see more in the mid-70s up into the 80s, although you can see it earlier than that. Lewy body disease tends to be a little bit earlier than that, more in the 60s. The other key feature that can be disturbing to families is that people can have very strong, repeated visual hallucinations. Mm-hmm. So they might see a person living in their house, they might see colored animals out in the yard or animals in the tree. Mm-hmm. So it's usually a really well-formed hallucination. It comes over and over again. Usually the person's not too disturbed by it, but the family might mm-hmm. be disturbed because they think there's something wrong with them psychiatrically when really it's part of this dementia.
And what about sleep disorders? Is that a common part of it?
It is, yes. Yeah. So sleep disorders, especially what we call REM sleep disorder, can be associated with it, and it can be a precursor to Lewy body disease. Not everyone with this REM sleep disorder will have Lewy body disease, but we see that in people who do end up with that disease, that some of them have this disturbance where they actually act out their dreams and actually move in their sleep, may have some restless leg syndromes, symptoms as well.
Well, Mary, the more we talk about these forms of dementias, the more apparent it is it's not just one person's disease, mm-hmm. it's the family's disease, because
definitely.
Look at the disruptions to family members mm-hmm. who are dealing with someone with a disease like that. Mm-hmm. And the individual can't really do anything about it, but right. the family member is losing sleep, the family member is trying to bring back to reality these hallucinations and mm-hmm. visual things that are going on. Mm-hmm. How do they handle that?
Well, I think initially, both of the REM sleep disorder and the hallucinations can be very frightening for the family member. It's like, what
yes.
is going on? And I think one of the other things that happens is that the hallucinations get diagnosed and treated with sometimes antipsychotic medication, which can be actually pretty harmful in many cases for someone with Lewy
yes.
body. So it's really important to understand what's going on and get a really good diagnosis of that early on so that you can really understand that this is Lewy body and not other things.
Yes, that's mm-hmm. really important, because sometimes people with Lewy body disease are put on these medicines for psychosis, and some of those can be life-threatening even, mm-hmm. Whereas you can use them in other dementias and don't have a severe side effect. So it is very important to understand the different types of dementias, and specifically Lewy body versus Alzheimer's mm-hmm. disease.
Alzheimer's is the most common. How common is Lewy body disease?
I don't remember the exact percentages, but some people think it's the second most common after Alzheimer's. Other people think that other studies will show that vascular dementia is the second most common, but it's more likely that Alzheimer's is the most common, mixed vascular and Alzheimer's is the second most common, and Lewy body is the third most common. So probably about maybe 15-20% of dementias are Lewy body.
And then the other one that is common also that comes to the forefront is the frontotemporal.
Yes.
Yes, and that was what my husband was diagnosed with, which took a while for that diagnosis to occur. Mm-hmm. At first it looks like a dementia and then begins to be treated like Alzheimer's because obviously something is going on, but it took more and more nuancing and testing to actually come to that diagnosis of frontotemporal. So Dr. Carlson, explain frontotemporal.
So frontotemporal dementia is really a mix of different types of dementias. So it refers to the front part of the brain or frontal lobes and the temporal lobes, which are the side parts of the brain. When a person has frontal temporal dementia that affects primarily the front part of the brain, then they tend to lose their social graces. Their memory might actually be intact early on, but they may start saying things they don't mean or exposing themselves in public. And these types of behaviors are very disrupting for families. They might say derogatory comments to people or sexually inappropriate phrases, and it really is disturbing to families. Later on, they do tend to develop memory problems as well and the functional impairment. With temporal lobe dementia, it tends to affect language early on, so they might have problems coming up with the right word, and not in a subtle way like you and I might experience when we're struggling for the right word, but really in a repeated episodes where they're struggling with every conversation and forgetting words for commonly used items, for example. So it's really a kind of a mix. Sometimes people have purely one type of symptoms with the behavioral changes. Other times they might have language. Sometimes they have a mix of that. But over time, they do develop memory symptoms as well.
So many of those, and just reading about them and have you express them, I recall that. Mm-hmm. But my husband also had apraxia, where he wasn't able to sit or lie down. Mm-hmm. He wanted to, but the message wasn't getting to his brain. Is that common with that dementia or with dementias in general?
It's common with dementias in general, so it's something you can see in Alzheimer's disease as well. So apraxia is a term, medical term used for when you can't figure out how to do something that you should know how to do from doing it all your whole life. So for example, getting into the shower and washing your hair, you might have to tell someone, turn the knob this way, put the shampoo in your hand, put the shampoo on your head, wash your hair. Or someone might have trouble getting into a car. So normally we just slip our leg into a car and sit down. They might put the wrong leg in first or grab the wrong part of the door frame to get in. Their brain just can't figure out how to do these really simple kind of tasks we don't even tend to think about.
And what about family caregivers mm-hmm. dealing with situations of mm-hmm. frontal temporal? Is there anything unique that you have discovered?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it is, when I think about the frontal temporal dementias and the frontal lobe dementias in particular, these are extremely challenging for caregivers. First of all, I think because they aren't always accurately diagnosed early on, people can be just like, why is my husband doing these things? He's making such poor judgments and doing risky, impulsive behavior that never was happening before. So there's a real lack of, like, what is going on here? And the misdiagnosing it as something else or attributing it to something else, there can be social consequences to that. I'm thinking of one fellow who was actually embezzled money, and he had frontal lobe dementia, mm-hmm. and he was imprisoned when really that wasn't the appropriate thing for him because he had a dementia. So the whole fabric of the family, can you imagine somebody's been married to somebody for 30 years, 25, 30 years, and mm-hmm. all of a sudden they start acting so strange. So that can be really challenging. Then when you have some of the other frontal dementias that when they're constantly on the move, they can, I'm thinking of one person I knew who she was constantly on the move. She could answer a question or talk with you, relate to you in a conversation, but she couldn't sit still long enough. to keep, and she had to be up and going, and then she'd come back and answer a question. Just some of these wearing behaviors. So I think certainly family members understanding that, knowing how to maximize what they're doing in terms of their environment for this person, but also in those cases, having some good understanding from others around them of what they're going through, and respite care and breaks and things yes. like that is extremely, I mean, it's always important for caregivers, but certainly in those cases especially.
Well, that the the level of care and the kind of erratic behaviors, it's a health risk for caregivers.
Oh, tremendously.
Yes, yeah, tremendous. So. The repetitive behavior, mm-hmm. obsessive behaviors. Yeah. Before we go to break, there is the Wisconsin Alzheimer's Disease Research Center, which is just a gift, a treasure that we have here at the University of Wisconsin, one of only 17 in the country. It's the latest one that has been awarded by the National Institute on Aging.
Geriatrics-based one in the country.
The only geriatrics-based. So once again, University of Wisconsin is on the global map in research, and we do have the Alzheimer's Disease Research Center here in Madison, and they have next Thursday evening, November 18th, there's a memory loss, empowering the community through early detection and management. Can you tell me a little bit about that program, Cindy?
Every year we have a program where we try to reach out to the community and answer a lot of these questions that people have about the diseases. So this year we're focusing on early detection, getting involved in the community. We have some great speakers lined up. Our guest MC is Cassandra McShepherd, who's based in Milwaukee, who's been a radio show host, has numerous other skills, motivational speaker, a vocalist, jazz vocalist, as well as other speakers. Dr. Asana, our program director, will be speaking. Dorothy Edwards will talk about early memory loss and warning signs. Betsy Abramson will talk about legal and financial planning. And also there'll be a session on caregiving and research participation by someone who's both, again, a caregiver for her husband with Alzheimer's and a research participant. So it's really an outreach to the community to help educate, which I think is one of the most important tools we can offer our families and caregivers, is education about the disease at this point in time.
And one of the nice things about it, it's from 5 to 8 p.m. There's a resource fair at 5 p.m. The program is 6 to 8. It's open to the public. There's no charge, and you don't even have to make a reservation. You can just come. It's
yes.
at Monona Terrace. Mm-hmm. We need to stop for a break, and when we come back, we're going to talk about the wonderful research that you're doing with statins and the question regarding the usefulness of the power of omega-3 in our health, and particularly as a preventive for Alzheimer's disease. You're listening to All About Living here on Madison 1670 WTDY. I'm Carol Kobe, and stay tuned. We'll be right back.
This is All About Living with Carol Kobe, Madison 1670.
Welcome back. We're talking about dementia and caregiving. Our guests are Mary Reines, who is Program Director of the Alzheimer's and Dementia Alliance of Wisconsin, and Dr. Cindy Carlson, who is here from the University of Wisconsin. She is connected with all kinds of, I'm looking for all your long title here, but what is your medical director of the VA Memory Loss Assessment Clinic, amongst other things, assistant professor of geriatrics with the UW School of Medicine and Public Health. And your research is utilizing statins, or looking at how statins can influence Alzheimer's disease. And tell me more about that research that you're doing, Dr. Carlson.
Well, the backdrop for that is that there have been a lot of treatment studies for Alzheimer's disease that have been really disappointing recently. So, and what we're understanding is that sometimes it may be too late to treat the disease with certain types of medications or other interventions. So what we're doing is trying to take a step back. And a lot of our research at our Alzheimer's Center is looking at how can we treat people who are at risk for Alzheimer's but are healthy and doing well and don't have any symptoms right now. So we, in our group, we're targeting people who have a parent with Alzheimer's but who are in their 40s, 50s, 60s, and otherwise are the thinking abilities are strong. So my work is looking at statins, and what I do is we have had several clinical trials, and one ongoing now funded by NIH. And what we're doing is seeing if statins make a difference in some of the brain changes that we know are related to Alzheimer's disease later. So what we do is we have some specific memory thinking tests. We ask people about, we'll do some brain scans on them and also look at special proteins in the spinal fluid that tell us about specific changes that are going on in the brain of people who are at risk for Alzheimer's disease.
Have you found out anything yet? Do you have any early findings?
Well, we're still analyzing the results of a study that we just completed. But so far, it looks like there may be, one study we did show some subtle improvements in cognition. Another study, we may see some improvements in blood flow to certain parts of the brain related to memory and learning. And the rest of the results we're still in the process of analyzing. So again, some of the studies have shown that certain types of medication, such as statins, may not be effective in treating Alzheimer's, but there's a lot of evidence that some of these treatments may actually have a role in prevention. So even that ties in with the recent news about the omega-3 fatty acid study.
I just heard on the news last week it doesn't have any effect on Alzheimer's.
Right. So they did a study looking at people who already had the disease. And again, we know that Alzheimer's disease probably starts in our 30s, 40s with changes in the brain, but it doesn't come to attention until we're in our 60s, 70s, or 80s. So we're trying to use some of these treatments that haven't shown effectiveness in people with Alzheimer's and take them back to people who are healthy in their 40s, 50s, 60s who are at risk for Alzheimer's disease.
So what is the story regarding omega-3? Should we not be taking our omega-3 or eating lots of salmon and things?
There's good evidence that it's good for your heart. And so we have this adage that what's good for the heart's probably good for the brain. So what I usually tell people is to do things that are heart smart, follow a heart smart diet, stay healthy, exercise, maintain your weight, follow up with your doctor for blood vessel risk factors, and go ahead and take omega-3 fatty acids for improvement of heart health. And hopefully we'll have studies down the road that show us they also protect the brain.
The whole idea of early diagnosis regarding dementias and Alzheimer's, sometimes people don't want to go there because there is no cure and they don't want the stigma of having a dementia associated with them. It's from what you're telling me, that they could be diagnosed with something else, and so the wrong medication could be given a person who perhaps does have an early dementia, and that by some early intervention that actually you can work in preventing. Is that correct?
We don't have any effective prevention strategies currently, but I think early intervention and early detection are really important because you get the education that you need, the resources you need. You can structure your environment so you can stay more functional and active. And then hopefully down the road, if we have all the physicians and other clinicians trained to identify this early, once we do have preventive therapies, then they'll be ready to get people early into to treat them.
And you need people for research. And you're working with that, Mary, the Alzheimer's Alliance.
Certainly all of us at the Alzheimer's and Dementia Alliance want to emphasize and encourage the, like you said, we have a wonderful resource here that is dealing with prevention, one of the few in the country, but also just the whole idea that these diseases, we just really, really need to have people involved on all levels, and there's nothing more precious you can do and empowering sometimes than participating in the research. And there are lots of other benefits to the research. You get to be involved with people who are probably the best brains related to research. The information that comes through that they're gathering here is shared with all of the other centers, as is the information gathered at all the other centers.
Well, thank you both for being here today. The time just flies by. Thank you, Dr. Cindy Carlson. Thank you, Mary Reines. Thank you for listening to All About Living. Thank you, Dylan. And I'm Carol Kobe. You've been listening to All About Living here on Madison 1670 WTDY. Now go out and have a great rest of the weekend.